Blog Talk Radio.
Donna, are you still there?
All right, everybody, welcome to the 86th edition of the On the Ropes Boxing Radio Show. I'm the hostess, Jenna J, joined by my co-host slash producer, Jeff Diani, and also Nick Powers. To kick things right off, I'm going to go over to my co-host, Jeff Diani. Jeff, this past week, there was a pretty interesting week in boxing. It had Jean Pascal versus Chad Dawson. What were your thoughts on this?
Jenna, I think I have a surprise for you here because I think I have Jean Pascal on the phone with me right now. Are you there, Jean?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Hey, Jean. We're happy to be talking with you. I first got to congratulate you there on your impressive performance against Chad Dawson. You scored an 11th round technical decision. How do you feel about your performance?
I feel great. I think that I fought good and I put a good show at the same time.
Great. Well, you know what? You did certainly impress the American boxing fans there. Chad Dawson went into the match 29-0. You know, what did you think going into it when you got right in the first round there? You saw what his game plan was. How did you react to his game plan by pulling off what you did?
But, honestly, the only thing about my game plan, I knew that I would have to start really fast and strong to show him that I'm the champion. He was the bigger name that night, but I was the champion, and you know, I had the crowd behind me, so I knew that if I started really big and fast, it would have kept up.
Great. Now, in this bout here, you seem to control a lot of the early rounds, and you actually had him hurt both in the 7th and 8th round. Do you think at any point that you had him hurt to the point where you thought you could knock him out?
Yeah, I think so, but one thing that I know in that fight, it's Chad Dawson is a great fighter, and you know he has a good chin because I know that I rock him with good punches, and he was still there. He has slick move, and he's a good fighter. He's a great fighter.
Okay, now a little bit later in the fight, Dawson seems to be coming on a little bit in the 9th round. He seemed to have you stunned, and he backed off, and you were able to get through that round. But in the 11th round, he was on the attack, and he seemingly had you stunned yet again, but you got through it. What do you think about that round and what was happening there?
Well, that round, because I know since the 9th round, he was getting tired, so you know, I told myself that in the 11th round, I'm going to let him punch, throw a lot of punches, let him get tired, and, you know, at the end of the round, just explode, get, you know, stronger. But, you know, unfortunately for me, I didn't get the chance to finish strong, but I was under control. That was a trick. That's all.
All right. Now, the accidental headbutt happened towards the last minute of the round. What were you feeling then? And then when you saw the cut, did you think the fight was immediately would be stopped?
Honestly, nope. But when I saw him, I thought that was a deep, a big cut. And honestly, I do understand the referee.
Okay. Now, you are the Ring Magazine light heavyweight champion. That's the distinction most people get, is considered the best light heavyweight out there. How do you feel about that?
Honestly, I feel great because I remember when I was 16, I was watching Roy Jones on HBO with that belt, and I was telling myself, one day I will get that belt too, and Saturday night I did it. So I was really, really proud of myself.
Great. Now, let's talk about what's next for you. The talk around boxing about a huge fight that could happen is between you and Lucien Boutte at a catchweight of around 172 pounds. How much would you like that bout?
Listen, I have no problem. Me, I like challenges. Lucien Boutte will be a great challenge for me, but right now I'm the king in town. I'm the boss in town. I am the king of my division. So if Lucien wants to fight me, he has to go up and, you know, challenge me. Because, you know, I have nothing to gain to chase Lucien Boutte right now.
Now, there is a rematch of Chad Dawson, but it allows you to take one fight in between. What is your immediate plan? Do you think you'll take an immediate rematch with Chad, or will you take that interim fight?
Honestly, I think I'm going to take my optional fight because I want to stay busy. I want to fight. I love boxing. I'm a boxer, but at first, I'm a boxing fan. So, you know, I'm going to try to have a fight in between. And after that, if Chad still wants to have a rematch, as the second defeat on his record, I have no problem. I'm just going to make more money.
Great. Well, we're also joined by my co-host, Jeff Ciani.
Hello, John Pascal. Pleasure to have you back on the show, and congratulations on your win.
Thank you very much.
Now, I wanted to ask you, sticking with the super middleweight theme and the potential of fighting Lucien Boutte, the only guy in your career who beat you is Carl Froch, and he's, of course, a member of the Super 6 tournament. And I'm wondering, were you at all surprised by the way he was being outboxed in his last match by Andre Durrell, Mikkel Kessler, before he ultimately lost the decision?
Honestly, I don't think he got outboxed against Mikkel Kessler. I thought that was a close fight. I watched the fight, and it could have gone either way because they fought in Denmark. Kessler had the fight, but I'm sure that if they would have fought in England, Frosch would have the fight too.
Now, I'm curious, what are your thoughts on Frosch's upcoming fight in Group Stage 3 of the Super 6 against Arthur Abraham?
Honestly, it's really an interesting fight. I think I'm going to go watch that fight in Monaco. And I think that Carl Froch is too strong for Arthur Abraham. Arthur Abraham is a good fighter, but he has nothing special. And I know that Carl, he can punch like crazy. He's a heavy hitter. He has long reach. He's tall. He's strong. So I guess that because of that, he's going to be able to get the win over Arthur Abraham.
Now, sticking with the Super 6 here, Jean, the matchup that is most intriguing perhaps in the third round coming up is the match between two Americans. Tournament favorite Andre Ward is taking on his fellow Olympic teammate Andre Durrell. What are your thoughts on that fight?
Honestly, that would be a crazy fight, but I don't think that fight would happen because those two guys are friends, and honestly, I would be really surprised, but both guys have great skills, tremendous power, and then they're fast, they're smart, and honestly, that would be a hard pick.
Okay, what about the other Group 3 stage match between Mikko Kessler and the tournament newcomer Alan Green?
Honestly, if Alan Green fights like he fought his last fight, that's going to be a walk in the park for Mikko Kessler. But in boxing, we never know what can happen.
Now, John, if you had to pick a winner right now on who you thought would ultimately come out on the tournament, A, who do you think will win the tournament, and B, do you think the winner of the tournament will ultimately become a big player in the light heavyweight division that you now rule over?
Honestly, it's really hard to pick a winner because all fighters are really good in that weight class. I thought maybe Frosch or Darrell, but now, you know, maybe I lean more for you know, Andrew Ward. So, you know, it's really a tough pick. And I think that Ward, Darrell, and Frosch has good chances to win the tournament. And the winner of this tournament will become a great star, a superstar. And I think they're going to move up to try to, you know, challenge the best at 175 pounds.
John, speaking of Carl Froch, your only career loss to him back in 2009, how much would you like to have a rematch with him? And he has said in previous...
That was in 2008.
2008, sorry. But he said in previous interviews that he would like to have a rematch with you. He said he has a verbal agreement with you after the Super 6 that he will have it. Do you want that rematch?
Yeah, of course, I want that rematch. Carl Froch is the only guy who beat me. We had a great fight, and anyway, we had a shake hands on that. So I said, if he's still champion, I'm still champion. See, we're going to fight again in Montreal. So I'm still champion, so I still want that fight. And if he still wants to fight, let's make it happen, because that's going to be a great war.
Great. Well, during the HBO broadcast, people were comparing you and your style to a lot of Roy Jones Jr. What do you think about those comparisons, and what do you think your style is best comparable to?
Honestly, I think I'm a mix of everything. I'm a big mix of Roy Jones because when I was young, like I told you, I looked up to Roy Jones, but I can brawl, I can bust, I can be smart, I got good footwork, I can go to war. So I guess that I have a style like a mix of Roy Jones, Floyd Mayweather, and Shane Mosley sometimes.
All right,
but, you know, I'm going to be the first Jean-Pascal for sure.
All right, let's change things up a little bit and talk about the sport right now as a whole. The biggest star in all of boxing is Manny Pacquiao. I was curious a little bit what your opinions are of him.
Honestly, I think the biggest star right now in boxing is Floyd Mayweather. But Manny Pacquiao is a great boxer. He got skills. He got good speed. And honestly, I'm like everybody else. I'm a big fan, boxing fan, so I can't wait to see that fight. And for sure, I'm going to be ringside to watch it.
Let's say that mega matchup ever does happen. Who would you be taking in it?
Honestly, never bet against a black guy.
All right, well, I'm going to go over to my co-host, Nick Powers. Nick?
Hey, John. First of all, congratulations. You put on a great performance on Saturday. Congrats on your win. My first question, going back to that fight, you mentioned towards the ninth round when Chad Dawson started coming on strong that you thought he was getting tired. But the HBO announcers, along with myself, thought that Dawson coming on late in the fight may have had something to do with your own stamina issues. Were you at all tired going into the latter half of the fight against Chad on Saturday?
Honestly, I was maybe a bit tired, but, you know, that was normal. But I think that Sean Dawson was way more tired than me. And the only thing why he was able to throw punches like that at the 11th round is because I let him throw punches like that. Because, you know, the first 10 rounds, I was moving around. I was jumping in, jumping out. So, you know, he could have done nothing about it. But the last, but you know, 11th round, I said I'm going to rest just a bit. Let him think that, you know, I'm tired. He's going to get tired and explode at the end, round the round, and go for the knockout in the 12th round.
Right. Now, You took the O off Chad Dawson's record. He was 29-0 undefeated fighter coming into this, and a lot of people put him in their top 10 pound-for-pound list. Now, being that you took the O off Dawson's record, where do you think that puts you in regards to the pound-for-pound list amongst the best fighters in the world?
Honestly, I really don't know what number, but one thing for sure is right now I earned my spot in the pound-for-pound list, so you should tell me what rank I should get.
Well,
now, John,
I put you up there, John. That's for sure. You put on a great performance this past Saturday against a really good, young, undefeated fighter, and I would definitely, definitely have you up there in the rankings.
Thank you.
Now, John, one of the guys also that you mentioned as a possible opponent for you is all-time great Bernard Hopkins, and I'm wondering, when we had Hopkins on the show a couple of weeks ago, he had mentioned that there were two fights out there that he was looking at right now. One of them is the one that he really wants is against David Haye. But he also mentioned Chad Dawson, who you've now beaten. Do you think that Hopkins will look your way for a possible fight?
Definitely, because if he thought that Chad Dawson was the man, he was wrong, because he knows since Saturday night that Jean-Pascal, the French-Canadian, is the real deal at 175 pounds. And I do respect Bernard Hopkins. It's a great legend, but I think that's going to be a great, great fight for us to make happen.
Now, do you think talks of him moving up to heavyweight, do you think that he would be able to perform well against somebody like David Haye up in that high weight class at his old age now?
Honestly, I think so, because Bernard Hopkins is a good fighter. He's really smart, he's clever, and he has old tricks. So I guess with his old tricks, he can do really good against David Haye.
Now, John, another guy mentioned was a guy that a lot of people consider to be the best super middleweight of all time, and that's Joe Calzaghe. And he's pretty much stated that he's done with boxing and that he's staying retired. Do you think he will really stay retired, and what do you think you might be able to do to lure him out of retirement?
Honestly, Joe Calzaghe is a great fighter. He beat my man Roy Jones. So, you know, if he wants to get back to boxing and, you know, fight me, it will be a pleasure. I know that will be a tough fight for me, because he's smart. It's fast, but to be the best, you have to beat the best. And before, Joe Calzaghe was the best in that weight division. And I just want to show the world that, you know, I'm among the elite right now.
All right. Now, Sean, after you won the fight against Dawson, the one guy that was actually calling you out was Tavoris Cloud. He's the IBF light heavyweight champion. What are your thoughts on him, and would you ever consider having a potential fight with him?
Definitely. Me, I'm a belt collectioner. So, you know, I want this belt, you know, the IBA belt. And if he wants to fight me, let's do this. That's going to be a tremendous fight, because Tavoris Cloud, he doesn't run like a chicken. He likes to fight. He's a great puncher. He got good speed. So that will be the best fight, I guess, right now at 175 pounds.
Great. Now, you said after the belt that you want to come over to America and, you know, show American fans what you're made of. You've only fought once in the United States. Are you planning to actually fight more into, you know, across the border?
Definitely, because I hope, guys, you are ready, because I told on HBO I'm about to invade America, and trust me on that, I will. Mark my words, I will.
All right. Now, you've just fought this past weekend. How soon are you looking to get back in there?
Honestly, right now I'm gonna take some time off, spend some time with my daughter Angel, because it's been like 3 months that, you know, I didn't see her, because I was out of the country for my training camp. So she's going back to school next week, so I'm gonna spend a lot of time with her. Then probably I'm gonna go on vacation for 10 days, come back in town, and go back in the gym, because I have to stay busy in the ring.
Okay, now of all the guys that we've talked about here, who do you think you're most likely to face next?
What?
I said of all the fighters that we've talked about on this show here, who do you think you're most likely to fight next?
Honestly, I don't really have a preference. You know, it's the one who wants really to challenge me. I'm going to be ready for him anytime, anywhere.
Okay, I got one final question for you. Is there anything you want to say to all your fans out there and the listeners of On the Ropes Boxing Radio?
Honestly, I want to thank everybody to support me and go check it out. JeanPascalBoxing.com is the best boxing site ever.
All right. Well, Jean, we thank you for your time on the show. We wish you the best of luck in the future, and we're just looking forward to seeing you get back in the ring.
And also, the U.S. custom, get ready because I'm coming, guys. I'm coming for you.
All right. We'll be on the lookout for you, Jean.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Thank you, Jean.
All right, everybody. That was Jean Pascal, the light heavyweight champion of the world. Remy, what do you think about what he had to say?
Yeah, I like Jean Pascal. This is the second chance we got to have him on the show, and he made a huge statement this week, and I think he surprised a lot of people, and myself included. It was a great performance by him. I think he's opened up a lot of opportunities for himself, and, you know, he's proven himself, I think, as long as Bernard Hopkins is there, I think it's hard to call Dawson or him. He's clearly established himself over Dawson at this point. And he's probably established himself as the top young guy out there right now. With Hopkins out there, it's tough for me to say he's established himself as the best at light heavyweight, but it was a great effort, and he's a really nice guy, Jean Pascal. It was good to hear his thoughts on the fight and his thoughts on some of the other things going on in boxing right now.
Yeah, he's talked about all these matches, and he doesn't seem to be afraid to challenge any of these guys out there. He's even willing to have a rematch with Carl Frosch, who we lost to in December 2008. So, I mean, there are tons of matches for him, and the light heavyweight division has just got a whole lot more interesting. And I'm going to go over to you, Nick Towers. What do you think about what he had to say?
Well, Jean's one of those guys that I've really noticed. He's kind of really hard to hate. I mean, there's really not too much you can't like about the guy. He comes and he has utmost confidence in himself, and he really comes to fight and wants to give fans value for money when he goes in there. And like he said, he tries to make himself sort of a renaissance man. He wants to be able to do everything in the ring, box, brawl, and everything else in between. And he definitely gave us some of that on Saturday night. And it was really interesting to see what he had to say, because he's a guy who wants to come to America and fight, who wants to make an impression on fans, not just within Canada, which is where his biggest fan base is. So it's definitely good for him that he wants to do that, because that's going to get on a lot of American fans' good side, especially considering he just beat one of the best fighters America has to offer in any weight class, let alone in the light heavyweight division. So Jean, I mean, he's a very interesting guy to listen to talk, and he's somebody who really truly has a really good passion for the sport of boxing, and that's something that you don't hear in a lot of people's voices, but you can tell that Jean Pascal is somebody that still possesses that, and it came out in this interview today, and it was great to hear from him, especially so close to his big win over Dawson this past Saturday.
All right, now let's talk a little bit about that and the win. He came in as a 4-1 underdog. Most people figured Chad Dawson would win. Being that it was in Canada, the scorecards might be a little closer, but there's no doubt that Jean Pascal deserved this victory here. He won a lot of the early rounds. It is kind of a shame that towards the end of the fight there was that headbutt that stopped. Chad was coming down. I honestly, he was coming on, but I don't believe he would have stopped Jean Pascal. There was a gap in his professional boxing career. He's shown a great chin. I think he would have been able to hold up to the attacks. But this is really comes down to something we've talked about the show a lot. When we're talking about Chad Dawson, it's something is just missing. He's got all the skills in the world. He's got the speed, athleticism, the punch variety that he can use in there. But something just seemed to be missing. I think it's what we saw this past weekend. He just lacks that killer instinct. He seemed to lay back a lot when he had Pascal hurt, or seemingly had Pascal hurt, and that cost him dearly in it. And he started very slow. He was not throwing enough punches. I'm going to go to you, Rummy. What do you think about his performance and the way that Pascal came out of this?
Well, I think the way that Pascal came out of this looks brilliant no matter what. And that's, I don't think let me put it this way. I'm going to compare Chad Dawson to somebody like Andrew Gallada, in the sense that Dawson, like you said, Jenna, he's got all the skills in the world. He is an elite A-level talent. I don't think anybody would doubt that. But for whatever reason, his A-level, A-plus level talent doesn't interpret into an A-level fighter. He's missing a little something, and I think it's in the mental department. He seems to lack the passion and the heart and the mental toughness to live up to that A-level talent that he possesses. And it reminds me of Galata in the sense that he, too, was an A-level talent at one point in his career with all the skills in the world, but in Galata's case, it was a mental shortcoming that was easy to identify. In Dawson's case, it's not as easy to identify, but I think it's something along those same lines. I mean, Dawson has obviously accomplished more than Galata, so I don't want people to look too deeply into this analogy, but the point is they were both talented fighters who in the ring, they never lived up to what they should have been able to potentially. And Dawson, we've talked about this before, he's the kind of guy that despite all that talent, he was unable to generate a lot of excitement about his fights. Despite all that talent, he was never really able to put on the type of performance where people said, wow, look at that guy. He textbook-wise, he did all the right things. He looked good in there. He had good defense, good offense, good jab, good foot movement, good ring generalship. But when you throw it all together and you put him in there with a fighter that was as hungry as Pascal, he clammed up, and he didn't do what he needed to do in order to win the fight. And, you know, I think that Dawson has the skills to beat Pascal, but obviously, as we saw this weekend, that's not enough, and Pascal was the hungrier fighter and no doubt deserved to win that fight.
Yeah, that's what you see in boxing sometimes. It's not always the most skilled or the best talent fighter that wins. It's the most determined fighter. And if you watch that fight, Jean Pascal was more determined than Chad Dawson was. He wanted it. He was hungrier, and you know what? He got it. He deserved the decision there. And it'll be interesting to see how the rematch will play out. And there's the talk of Chad Dawson potentially taking a bout in between, and Jean Pascal just confirmed here he most likely will take a shot in between. And that's what we're going to talk about now, is where does Pascal go from here? Nick, you know, we mentioned all these names in the show. What do you think is the most likely option?
Well, to me, the most likely monetary option is going to be Pascal versus Buttigieg, and as you mentioned previously, that's going to be a huge, huge fight in Canada. I'm not sure if I believe Pascal mentioned something about Buttigieg having to come up to face him, whether or not he meant all the way up to the 175-pound limit or at a catch weight, as you mentioned, of around somewhere like 172. Remains to be seen, but I'm pretty sure that they'd be able to work out a deal with that because that fight stands to make a ton of money in Canada. Both of these guys have huge fan bases, and it could very well be the biggest fight of two Canadian fighters on Canadian soil that we've ever seen in the history of boxing. And it would be an interesting matchup as well because I think that Lucien Boutte, being a southpaw, having a lot of technical skills, somewhat like Chad Dawson, is interesting to put Pascal back in with because we saw how determined he was and how deservedly he won the fight this past Saturday. So it's definitely a matchup that provides a lot of intrigue no matter what weight it happens at, and I think it's one that makes the most sense for both guys because it's a name to put on their resume. Nobody's really stepping that far out of their comfort zone as far as weight. Neither of them are as far as home field advantage, so that would be a tremendous, tremendous fight, and it would get a lot of hype, especially in Canada, and I think that's probably the best option for Jean Pascal at this point would be to step in there against Lucien Boutte.
All right, Remy, the three most likely options, Bernard Hopkins, Lucien Boutte, or Forrest Cloud, where do you think he's going?
I think he's probably heading towards Boutte as well for a lot of the reasons that Nick had just mentioned. But personally, I would rather see him fight Cloud as a unification, or especially Hopkins, because I have my doubts whether Hopkins is actually going to land that fight against David Haye. And without that option there, Hopkins mentioned, you know, that he did want to fight Chad Dawson. If HBO came up and made up the right amount of money, that he would do something like that. I don't know if that fight's going to happen. I would personally like to see Hopkins Pascal because, to me, the winner of that fight would undoubtedly be the best light heavyweight in the world. But in all likelihood, I suspect it will be Boutte as well.
All right. Well, the fight that I would love to see, I think it would be an absolute war, Tavoris Cloud versus Jean Pascal. Both guys have proven they have a very good chin. I mean, we saw in the last fight with Forrest Cloud, he took the best shot that Glenn Johnson had. Pascal took some very, very clean shots from Chad Dawson. I think that would just be an epic matchup. And I know that Forrest Cloud is not afraid to travel. I think he would travel over the border for that fight. Most likely what will happen, I do believe Lucien Boutte, just for a financial sense, that is an excellent matchup. And it is also favorable to Jean Pascal because he is the bigger guy. He will be the bigger guy in there, having fought three times at light heavyweight. So either way it goes, it's very interesting. And you know what? Like I said before, the light heavyweight division is just a heck of a lot more interesting. To change things up a little bit, let's go to Chad Dawson. Now, he has to take a fight in between, or he could just sit around and wait around for John Pascal. The fight that was talked about before by HBO and was talked about after the fight was Dawson versus Cloud. So, I mean, do you think that Dawson will take such a dangerous matchup, or do you think he'll take something lighter in between?
I think that he has to take a matchup like that, to tell you the truth, Jenny, because I think his hand was forced. He just lost to Jean Pascal, and now, in order to redeem himself, if he can't get the immediate rematch with Pascal, I think the best way for Chad to make a statement is to try to take on the next best option, which I think is Devorah's Cloud. So I would personally like to see that happen. That's the fight I'd like to see him do next, but who knows what he's going to do. I mean, Dawson's one of those guys who seems to lack the hunger inside the ring, but he seems hungry for the big fight, so I wouldn't be surprised if he took on Cloud, because if he took on Cloud and won, and then he took on Pascal in the rematch, you know, he'd save a little bit of face following this loss, I think.
All right. Well, besides that fight that took place, there was another fight, and it was on this past Friday on the Friday Night Fights. It had Chris Areola, you know, in a fight against a top 20 type guy. He didn't look particularly that great. He came in at 256 pounds. He didn't look in the best of shape. There were claims after that he hurt his hand. I'm going to go over to you, Nick. What did you think of that fight? You've been very critical. I was critical too of Chris Areola. What do you think about the shape that he came in and the fight itself?
Well, the shape he came in, if anybody knows my opinion of Chris Areola, shouldn't be very surprising. I was pretty much disgusted with the fact that he came in at 256 pounds. And even though James Slater, who posted a few articles about Areola and the fight on ESB, mentioned that he looked a lot more solid than he had, 256 is not solid to me. I mean, he still was flabby, and he still showed to me that he doesn't have the passion to get in the best shape that he possibly can. As James did mention in his articles, he's a guy who really doesn't run out of stamina that much, and we saw this in the fight this past Friday. But at the same time, that doesn't necessarily mean you should be able to go in there and just look like an absolute slob. I mean, this is a guy who's a professional fighter, and he's trying to come in and prove a point that he's one of the best heavyweights in the world, trying to step up and really bring the title back to America. But he's not doing that. I mean, he's a guy who catches constant criticism, and if you keep catching constant criticism, you must be doing something wrong, I think. I mean, as far as the fight, he won a wide decision. He looked okay. Apparently, he hurt both of his hands in the fight, his left hand early in the second round, and his right hand had some tendon damage, I imagine. But at the same time, you know, that's very commendable that he would fight through that, but it doesn't take away from the fact that he didn't come into that fight looking like he was in the shape he should have been. Even though he got hurt in the fight, and that may have contributed to him perhaps not getting the stoppage, which a lot of people touted him to get, that's possible too. But before he hurt his hands in the fight, he didn't get ready before the fight. And so, I mean, it's like a broken record. You know what I mean? I keep saying the same stuff, and he keeps doing the same stuff. And I'm not the only one that's saying these things about Chris Areola. So it's definitely disappointing. A win over Quezada on, you know, Friday Night Fights isn't going to put him in position to get another lucrative bout on HBO anytime soon, I don't think. And he's really going to have to try and sit down and figure out during this layoff that he has between now and his next fight, whenever that may be, if he has to get his hands fixed, if he really wants to try and be taken serious, or if he wants to just keep doing what he's doing in hopes that he'll be able to make a solid living and do what he loves to do, which is fight. But I'm pretty sure that he's going to have to sit down and try to reestablish what his real motives are, because he needs to come into fights in better shape, point blank, period. Yeah. And it showed this past Friday.
You know, and the thing is, even though it didn't appear that he was in the best of shape, he still throws the third most amount of punches recorded by CompuBox in heavyweight history. Now, that's unthinkable that a guy who's not even in his best shape can do that. So, you know, if he can just get himself in better condition, he does have the skills, he does have the talent, he just doesn't seem to have the work ethic. And he's been at these lighter weights before. He weighed around 230 pounds to fight against Malcolm Tan. He was around 239 for Chaz Weatherspoon. So he can get in shape. He can get at these lower weights, and he does move better at that weight. So I'd like to see him do it. I'm going to go to you, Rummy. What do you think about Chris Areola, and what do you think his prospects are at heavyweight after what you saw this past Friday?
broken record here in the sense that a familiar pattern is established. I mean, after his loss to Vitali Klitschko, he told the world that he was going to rededicate himself, go out there, get his stuff together, and really dedicate himself to his game. Then he fought his next big fight after he beat Minto was against Tomas Adamek, and afterwards he admitted he thought he would walk through Adamek, that he didn't take his training as seriously as he needed to and whatnot. And now, you know, after that fight, he came in even heavier. It was something Teddy Atlas mentioned a lot in the fight. You know, I don't think that Areola is ever going to become a champion at this point unless a really weak belt holder comes along. At the same time, the heavyweight division is at a point where there aren't a lot of names out there, so as long as he continues to win, he will still be a player, but I don't think his future is very bright at this point. I honestly don't. Because of the reasons we said, because of the broken record pattern, I just don't think he'll ever be an elite heavyweight, even in this weakened, watered-down version of the heavyweight division.
All right, now, speaking of the heavyweight division being watered down, certain names are continuously coming back. Smoke and Bert Cooper made a comeback. Razor Ruddock's making a comeback. But there's also a guy that refuses to retire, and he's continuously coming back. That's Evander the Real Deal Holyfield. He has signed a fight agreement to fight Sherman the Tank Williams on November 5th. This is just a few weeks after he turns 48 years old. Now, I've said previously on the show, I believe, you know what, it's in Holyfield's right to continue fighting. As long as he's fighting guys that aren't the Klitschkos, he can continue on. I think he earned that with his fight against Nikolai Volkov, which wasn't the prettiest to watch, but he deserved a victory, and he was robbed of that. He looked all right against Botha. This fight here, I don't see much danger for him. I think he will win it. But the thing that kind of disturbs me a little bit is that apparently the WBC, the head of the WBC, Jose Suleiman, has promised the advisor of Holyfield that if Holyfield wins this fight, he will let him have a match with Vitali Klitschko. That concerns me a little bit. I don't want to see him, and I know that Vitali Klitschko is a little bit faded. I still don't want to see Holyfield anywhere near there. I don't believe it would be very competitive. I think it's just not a very good fight at this stage of his career. I'm going to go back to you, Rummy. What do you think about Holyfield continuing the fight, the guy he's fighting, and the prospects of him fighting Vitali Klitschko if he wins?
Well, Holyfield is going to fight, I think, until somebody knocks him out and proves to him it's over. As long as he stays on his feet and, you know, lasts the distance against these guys, which he has done in recent years against all the guys he's been in there with, I don't think he's going to hang him up. I think he's going to keep marching towards his dream of regaining the undisputed heavyweight championship of the world, no matter what. The prospects of him getting a title shot and being guaranteed a shot at the WBC, should he win this matchup coming up, I do think that's a bit ridiculous. I don't think that that's warranted. I don't think he deserves it. And even if he looks spectacular in his next fight, I don't think that quite justifies him being put into the ring against Vitali Klitschko. As for that fight happening, I wonder whether it even really will, because if I'm not mistaken, I recall reading an interview by Vitali Klitschko where he said he had a great deal of respect for Holyfield and how he was one of the greatest champions ever. And he said, you know, he's just not that fighter anymore. He's an old man now. And he said, I would never fight him. If I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure that's exactly what he said. And I wonder whether the fight will happen no matter what Jose Suleiman says, regardless of what he promises. I'm not sure that Klitschko will get into the ring with him, and not because he's afraid of Holyfield, who's going to be 48, as you mentioned, Jenna. I think Vitali Klitschko has a little bit too much respect for himself and for Holyfield to take that fight. I don't know if he'd risk being stripped of his title at this point if it came down to that, but I agree with you. That's a horrible fight. Vitali Klitschko might be primed to be beaten anytime soon because he is deteriorating, he is getting older, he is slowing down and showing some signs of wear, tear, and weakness, but I can't see Holyfield being the guy that gets that perfect storm scenario, and even if he did, I can't see him being able to take advantage of it at this stage in his career. So I'm against that fight any which way you look at it. I really hope that it doesn't happen. I almost hope Holyfield loses his decision, and not because I don't appreciate what he has done in this sport and what a great champion he once was. I just think he's at the point where his warrior heart is refusing to let him quit, and his skill level is just no longer there. He's a 48-year-old man. He didn't have the power of a George Foreman, say, when he was 48 years old, was still being competitive and still had that knockout punch. Holyfield never had that tremendous knockout power. I don't like it at all.
Yeah, I certainly have to agree with you there. I mean, and being a guy like Sherman Williams, who's basically a journeyman of a decent record, isn't going to prove much. I mean, Holyfield can beat these guys all day long. It doesn't mean that he's ready for a title shot of anything. And like you said, it takes him pretty much getting knocked out for him to tell that would be the end. That happened to Sugar Ray Leonard. Sugar Ray Leonard got knocked out by Hector Camacho. That's when he knew it was over. You know, he knew it was over at that point in his career, and that's what's going to take for Holyfield. At 48, his prospects aren't looking that good. I really honestly don't see a champion to beat. Even David Haye would have a field day with him. I think he'd just be too much. But, you know, if he wants to continue fighting guys like Sherman Tank Williams, fine. But if you want to fight the Klitschko's, just retire. But anyways, guys, it's time for our second guest this week's show. He is a former two-time heavyweight champion, and he is also a member of the Boxing Hall of Fame. We have Big George Foreman on with us now. How are you doing today, George?
I'm living a good life in Houston. Pretty hot. How's everything?
Everything is great, George. We're happy to be talking to a legend in the sport like yourself. But before we discuss your career in the ring, let's talk a little bit about what you're doing now, and that's being the trainer and manager of your son, George Foreman III. How do you feel about your son wanting to get into the sport of boxing?
It's quite interesting because I have five sons, and the most docile of them all is George Foreman III. We call him the Monk. Monk's not been much of an athlete, nor did he have any aggressive side. So when he decided to go into boxing, it shocked all of us, and my wife only agreed that he could if I made certain I kept him protected by being his training manager.
I've heard some rumors that when he first started out, he was training himself, you know, basically for the first year with some tips from you. And then one day you decided to get in the ring with him and spar and see what he was made of. Is that true?
Yeah, I found out, of course, when he was attending college in California, periodically he stopped by gyms and tried boxing out on his own. And then in Houston, of course, you know, I thought he was concentrating thoroughly on the college because he got a good college education at Rice University. And come to find out, he'd sneak into the gym and try it all the time. But it was a long time. But he hadn't had a boxing match before I started trying to help him. He'd only spar.
How do you feel when you watch your son getting into the ring for a fight?
It's not an easy thing because at first, even me, I didn't even like to come out. I'd prepare him for the boxing match, get him in good shape, and I hired two other guys to work in the corners. I wouldn't even come out until the fight was over. That's how it bugged me. But now I'm getting braver to the point where at least I can come out and watch.
Now, your son's doing this with no amateur experience. You had a short amateur career yourself, but a successful one. How important do you think, you know, amateur experiences are for a fighter, you know, to make that transition to the professional?
I think if it's available, it would be a great thing. But if it's not, you just really can't look back. Probably one of the greatest boxers of all time never had one amateur fight like Jack Dempsey. And I myself only had 25, and those 25, strangely enough, most of them was in the Olympic year of the Olympics, qualifying through Golden Gloves, National AAU, the Olympic Trials, and the Olympics. So amateur experience is a wonderful thing, but if you don't, you just can't even look back because professional boxing is altogether different anyway.
Let's talk a little bit about your career. How was it that you got into the sport of boxing?
I just went down to the gym to lose some weight, actually, and then I got into a lot of trouble in the Job Corps Center, and they seemed to think I was interested in boxing. They would allow me to stay in the Job Corps Center. It would get me out of trouble. I figured I was going to be a good street fighter after a year of my amateur boxing, go back to Houston, Texas, and beat everybody up. Little did I know it would lead me into a gold medal matches, and I would pick up skills on the left jab, right hands, and all of those things, where I even lost my desire to even be a street fighter.
Now, winning the gold and becoming the best American upcoming, you know, heavyweight, what was that feeling like when you won the gold?
Oh, winning that gold medal, I tell you, just to be on the Olympic team, was really wonderful to me. I had a lot of friends who had served in the armed forces. They'd come home with their uniforms, and they were so proud. Everybody was proud of them. I didn't get a chance to serve. By 19 years old, I was on the Olympic team, and I had those colors, track suits, dress-up suit, everything. And I told my mom how proud I was to have some uniforms, even if I didn't win a boxing match. So to win one match after another and then be in a position to win a gold medal, wow, that blew me away. And winning that gold medal at the end, I wanted the whole world to know where I was from, so I picked up a small American flag and paraded around the ring to make certain they knew this was my chance to represent my country. That was greater to me than even winning a boxing match.
Now, after that, you decided to turn professional. What was it like, and what were your expectations when you decided to become a professional boxer?
Expectation. I wanted to go on and work for the Job Corps Center, finish my college education and all of that. But everyone said I could make a lot of money and become champion. And finally, someone confessed that I could make $1 million. So I expected going into boxing that I would make these $100,000 and eventually make $1 million. That was my expectation. But I found out that along the way I could punch, really punch, one knockout after another. And before long, surprisingly, 3.5 years, I was the number one contender in the world. It surprised me.
Well, George, we're also joined by my co-host, Jeff Ciani. Jeff?
Hi, George. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you, Jeff.
George, when you did fight for the heavyweight championship against Joe Frazier, you went into that fight as a 3-1 underdog. Did the perception that Joe was going to beat you, did that give you any extra motivation going into that fight?
Just getting in the ring with Joe Frazier was extra motivation because I had seen Joe Frazier. I'd been matched 37 times previously, and my manager would always tell me the other guy had the weak jaw, he didn't have this, and we'd concentrate. But fighting Joe Frazier was the first time in the dressing room that he didn't even tell me anything because we both knew not to go there. This guy had no holes in his armor. This was a great fighter. The first time I'd gotten into the ring, I was really afraid. I was afraid. And I tell you, you corner a cat, and that's when you can get hurt. And I was the cat that night.
What was going through your mind when it was over after two rounds and you won the heavyweight title?
You win a title, the first thing come to your mind is unbelievable. Then your name, just like a cash register, start going Jack Dempsey, Joe Louis, Muhammad Ali, Sonny Liston, Floyd Patterson, George Foreman. Your name fits right in there, and you can feel it in a split second, the heavyweight champion of the world. It was the most dynamite season for a long time. Plus, I was going to get that $1 million.
Now, after that, one of the title defenses you had was against Norton, and you stopped him in two rounds as well. Did you think going into that one that that was going to be a tougher fight?
I expected the Norton fight to probably be the most tough fight I'd ever had in my career because he was a big man just like me. He was really loaded with muscles. He had a record filled with lots of knockouts. As a matter of fact, he had gone two fights with Muhammad Ali, and they both looked like he won to me, although he won the first one and lost the other by decision. I really thought this was going to be it for me. I trained harder for the Norton fight than I'd ever trained in my life.
Now, speaking of Ali, George, when we had Angelo Dundee on our show, he was talking about your fight with Ali, and Angelo said, "People try to say that I designed the rope-a-dope, but I thought Muhammad was a dope to be on the ropes." And I'm wondering, looking back on that fight and you know, the story surrounding the ropes in that fight, what are your thoughts on that whole thing looking back on it now?
Oh, and looking back on it, I had this real thing about cutting the ring off. You get into the ring with me and you try to move, you are always going to find yourself in the corner. And after a couple of rounds with Muhammad Ali, he would hit, and there was nowhere to run. I'd corner him and just start throwing lots of punches. So the rope-a-dope really was not a design. It's just something he had to do. And because he had this tremendous experience, I remember it must have been the third round, I put everything I had on him, and he knew he was supposed to have been gone. And the bell rang, He looked up at me as if to say, I made it. And I looked at him equally and said, how did he make it? From that point on, the fight started to turn. He realized that he could survive my heavy punches. They were hard shots to come after that, but he had this funny confidence that he could make it. But that strategy was not a design. It just evolved.
Now, was there anything about Muhammad Ali that surprised you that you weren't expecting going into the fight that he brought to the table when you were in the ring with him?
Brave. I've never gone in the ring with anyone that courageous. I hit him one time in the side, and it hurt so bad. He looked at me as if to say, I'm not going to take that off of you. And he started to charge, and then he said, no, I can't fight with this guy. And he backed up into the rope. Most guys, afterwards, I'd hit them, and they say to themselves, I'm knocked out. I'd hit him. He didn't say it. He didn't say anything. He just said, look, I'm going to get beat up. I've never seen a human being that brave, never before, nor after.
Were you at all disappointed that you never wound up getting a rematch with Ali? And if you did get to go back in the ring with him in the years following your fight with him, do you think you could have reversed the outcome of your first fight?
I tried desperately to get that boxing match, and for good reasons, he wouldn't allow me to have it. And you've heard the expressions, one scared and the other glad of it. I mean, I beat this guy up about the sixth or seventh round, and I mean, I hit him with a good shot, and he whispered in my ear, that all you got, George? I knew the punch hurt him, but the point of it is, who wanted to get in the ring with someone like that again? Not me. And he got hit so hard, he didn't want it either. I mean, it wasn't like I was praying, please let me have him again. If I had fought him again with the same kind of vengeance I had to get even, the results would have been pretty much the same. He knew, he had my number. That's all there is to it.
Now, George, after all these fights, you took some time off, and when you returned, you took on Ron Lyle in a fight that ended up being the 1976 Ring Magazine Fight of the Year. Looking back at it, how tough of a fight was that for you?
Now, Ron Lyle's, no doubt, was the toughest fight I had in my life. He wasn't the toughest man, but for the first time, I was beaten up, and I just decided, look, I'm just going to have to die in this ring. I'm just not going to quit. I'm going to keep getting up. And with Ron Lyles, he beat me up so bad that I think eventually he fainted and I won the boxing match.
Was that the most you were ever hurt in your career?
Yeah, I wasn't hurt in the Muhammad Ali fight. They counted me out because I thought I jumped up at eight count and they counted 10. And, you know, so I wasn't hurt in that fight. I was actually, honestly, knocked down. But the Ron Lyles fight, I was hurt. I was hit so hard, you didn't feel anything. You just find yourself on the canvas. And this was the test of my life because I couldn't come back with any excuses like as with the Muhammad Ali fight. I had excuses, you know. But this time, the whole world saw, no excuse, George. I had to keep getting up. That was as close to what I found endurance and stamina, all of it bottled up. I had it that night. If without it, I wouldn't have even walked out of that ring alive with Ron Lyle.
Now, after that fight, you won 5 straight, and then you fought Jimmy Young, and most people can see that if you had beat Jimmy Young, you would have got your shot at Ali. Can you tell us what it was like going into that fight in Puerto Rico?
Well, Jimmy Young fight was going to be a 12-round fight. I was going to make certain, first of all, that I'd gone 12 rounds. And that I was going to get a decision, show the world that I had this stamina. They said I couldn't go over 7th round. I was going to show that, beat Jimmy Young, and then demand a fight with Muhammad Ali because he had previously had a match with Ali, and there was a controversial decision. A lot of people thought Young had won that fight. But one of the organizations said if after this fight Muhammad would not make the match, they would strip him and give it to the winner of the Young fight. So this was going to be a prize that night. I went into that fight basically expecting to get an easy win. Little did I know that would be the fight that would lead to my 10 years absence from boxing.
Can you tell me a little bit about that? A lot of fans have heard what went on, and maybe they want to hear it from your own mouth, what went on in the locker room after you lost that bout?
Well, after I waited around for the decision in the boxing match, of which I really still think I won that boxing match on points. But I didn't win, so I kind of like, I was so hot. The air conditioners had gone out in San Juan, Puerto Rico that night. The hottest place I've ever felt in my life. Went back to my dressing room to cool off like you normally do, and it was so hot you just couldn't sit down. And I was walking, I started thinking, well, who cares about this boxing match? You're still George Foreman. You got money. You can go home. You can go to your ranch. You can retire if you want to. You don't need boxing. You can retire and die. From that point on, every word in the conversation led that I was going to die, and I knew I was about to die in a dirty, smelly dressing room, and it was, didn't even have air conditioning. I fought for my life in that dressing room, and I heard a voice within me ask, you believe in God, why are you scared to die? And I was really afraid. I was scared. And I tried to fight for my life. I didn't want to tell anyone in the dressing room what was going on because they would have thought maybe he's disappointed he lost the boxing match. Eventually, I tried to make a deal, you know, because I knew there was God. I said, I'm still George Foreman. I can box and give money to charity and for cancer. And the voice answered me within, I don't want your money. I want you. Well, in a split second, my legs gave out on me, and I tried to scream to everyone in the room, hey, y'all, before I could say another word, I was in this deep, dark place, over my head, under my feet, nothing. And it was a horrible smell that goes along with death, and I knew it was the end of me, a big dump yard. I was so, and I didn't get a chance to say goodbye to my mother, my children. I was scared. And I looked around and got mad and said, I don't care if this is death. I still believe there's a God. I just didn't believe in religion, you know. And then when I said that, I believe in God, like a big hand reached in and pulled me out of this hopelessness. And I was alive in the dressing room again. Evidently, they had picked me up off the floor, and I laid on the table. And as I laid there, my doctor standing behind me, I told him, Dr. West, move your hands. The thorns on his head are making him bleed. And I saw, no one else did, blood coming down my forehead. And I looked on my hand. I started screaming. I saw blood. Jesus Christ is coming alive in me. Well, you know what they did. They strapped me down and took me to intensive care. But I've been telling that story now for over 33 years, how I had no idea that religion exists. I stopped boxing for 10 years. I couldn't even make a fist. I just went to the dressing room, and I hit the bag, and it was just a big piece of leather where beforehand it had been Frazier and Ali. I'd hit imaginary on that bag, but this time it was nothing. For 10 years, I just started preaching. I was ordained an evangelist. A year after the Jimmy Young fight, and I traveled all over the world telling the story I just told you. I just didn't believe religion existed. I thought it was for poor people who were depressed, and I had money, and I didn't need it, I thought. And that's what happened in the Jimmy Young fight.
Let's talk a little bit about your retirement. You were, you know, you weren't officially retired, but you never did fight again for 10 years. What was it like in those experiences there preaching and telling people your story?
Oh, it's strange because I always say there's two doors to the world. There's a front door, you come in as a wealthy, famous athlete. Then the back door where you're just on the street corner preaching. I shaved my coveted mustache off. I took all my hair off my head so I'd be on the corner. No one recognized me. I'd gone up to 315 pounds. And, you know, it was a lot of fun because I thought you had to be rich and famous to make it in this life. People would stop me if I get a battery charger and give me a charger. I'd try to pay them. They say, get out of here, biggin'. I'd give they let me get in line to have the extra thick piece of meat at the butcher store. Sometimes even the airline stewards would allow me to come up front to a bigger seat. They said, we can't give you in the food, big guy, but that seat is too small in coach. And I found out it's a great world. You don't have to be famous. So really, for 10 years, I truly enjoyed myself. I could go into the store, no one recognized me, and I could buy the those detergents that didn't have any names on them, and nobody cared. I shopped with and started learning how to change my oil, do my own dishes. It became a great world, you know. It's a lot more fun than being some spoiled athlete having everyone do everything for you.
Now, one of the most amazing things about your career is the comeback and the decision behind it, and it's something that's really been unmatched when it comes to boxing. And I want to ask you a little bit about how you came to that decision to come back to boxing and what were your expectations when you first got back in the gym?
Well, when you take off of boxing, I was a pretty wealthy athlete, but I didn't know how people took advantage of athletes. I'd look in, and accountants, for instance, had found ways of sneaking money out of my bank accounts. I'd looked and had people who had told me, Joyce, invest in this, oil wells and gas wells that didn't exist. You would see, I never could see, I used to hear about athletes going broke, but I never thought it would happen to me. But after about 8 years, I looked up and I was broke. I had a portfolio pretty much empty. And I didn't, you know, that's the only thing I knew how to do was box. And so I tried to support my youth center and work and for places kids to hang out. And that the only alternative, I was speaking at a church one night, and they asked for an offering for my youth center. And they said, help George with those kids. And it was so embarrassing, everybody looking at me. Here I was, had been a wealthy athlete there asking people who didn't have anything for money. I said, you know what? I'm not going to ever ask anyone in for anything. I'm going to be heavyweight champion of the world again. That's how I'll support my youth center. And I was 315 pounds making a decision after almost 10 years to get back into the ring. My trunks, nothing fit me. And I figured, and I said I was going to be heavyweight champ of the world and get it. I didn't say I was going to come back and fight for the money. That's where integrity started to fit in. I was going to be champ of the world. And I started off campaigning one fight after another. Most I was being offered was $2,500, sometimes $5,000. I even got a purse up to $12,500. That's when I knew I was on the comeback then.
Now, when you first came back, most people were not taking you too seriously. How did you deal with that?
Yeah, because of my age, when I told everybody I was coming back into boxing and my weight, they laughed at me. He's too fat. He's too old. And I'd hear those things. But every time I look into the mirror, I just say to myself, look, people are saying those things about you, but, hey, doesn't matter if they're true or not, but no one is sending you $1. You got to look after your family. You got to start the youth center. And I'd travel all over the country, and I'd get into the ring so big, but I kept working out and kept training. I listened to the jokes about me. As a matter of fact, I started to laugh with them, and people didn't notice that I wasn't sad, that I was laughing, because I had 10 years of telling people who lost loved ones, have faith. You can do anything. All things are possible. And for the first time, I had to really use the product that I had been selling, had faith. I did. I had garnered enough faith to do anything.
Changing things up here for a little bit, you were always one of my personal favorite commentators when you did the broadcasting over at HBO. I was wondering, A, if you missed commentating at all, and B, what were some of your favorite experiences when you did work as a commentator?
And I realized I was at HBO at a very important time in the career that I broadcasted at HBO as well, because I'd seen the development of Pernell Whitaker. He was a softball, but one of the best boxers of all time, but he'll only be recognized as the years go by. I've seen some of the great fighters. Mike Tyson, I did one of the commentation for one of his boxing matches. I saw the development of Lennox Lewis. All these guys get better and better. So the experiences were one after another. I did like it because I was on television sharing my view and what I felt people were watching, and it gave me a good experience. But one fight after another, they got better and better. James Toney, when he developed, was a beautiful thing. I saw Roy Jones Jr. develop. So the experiences are just too many to really comment on which one were best. 13 years I did it, only intending to do it 3 years. I ended up doing it 13 years.
Do you miss it at all?
No, not at all. With HBO, they were such a kind group of people. They'd fly you first class to every venue, and, of course, you had the best hotels and even have a nice lunch before the boxing matches. It was a first-class treatment. I miss that sometimes because I go home and my wife says, fix your own food. What do you think? But other than that, I miss being treated like a star. They treated me like a star, but that's about it. I had so many kids. One child of mine, his team had gone undefeated in Boston, not losing one football. He was in this private school. And, you know, I didn't see one game because I couldn't put it off because HBO would have me for these different weekend days. and I couldn't make commitments. And then one day I looked up and I said, you know, those kids don't really want a lot of money. They don't care about things, but they sure would like to see you stand up in the stands. So I had to leave to give my kids some time.
George, I'm curious. Do you currently still follow the heavyweight landscape today? And if so, what do you think about the heavyweight division today and some of the top guys out there like the Klitschko brothers?
For the first time, I hate to use the word, but disappointed I am. The heavyweight division is just about dissolved. There's not much to offer. And I'm hoping my son coming back, George the Three, will start provoking other athletes to say, I can beat that guy. I can beat that guy. And the United States is going to have some good boxers. I'm not happy at all with the heavyweight division. I don't like the champions. I don't like their styles. And I don't even like the contenders who challenge them. It's nothing that's going on in the heavyweight division. All the life now is in the lightweight division. This Pacquiao is the star of the day. Pacquiao is the best fighter out there.
Now, in addition to Pacquiao, who are some of the other guys out there right now that you do enjoy watching in some of the lighter divisions?
I like Mayweather as well, Floyd Mayweather, but that's about the size of it. There's so many other who are equally as good out there, but the cream of the crop is at Pacquiao. I just love him. He works out, he trains, and he doesn't say a whole lot. So after his fighting career is over, he'll be known for what he accomplished and not what he said.
Now, George, you mentioned Pacquiao and Mayweather there. The fight that every boxing fan wanted to see was a mega bout between Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather. And now, unfortunately, it doesn't look as if we're going to get that fight this year. I'm wondering, A, do you think we'll ever get that fight? And B, how do you see it playing out if that fight does get made?
Well, it's one of those fights that I hope never happens, because Pacquiao doesn't need Mayweather in his life. And it'll be one of those life-changing experiences for Pacquiao especially. For instance, I didn't have to fight Muhammad Ali. I really didn't have to take that fight. I took the fight, and it turned into more than just a boxing match. It became a political statement, one way and the other, and today we're great friends. But if I had it to do all over again, because of all the other sprinkling on the pies, I never would have been taking part in such a fight. And I think Pacquiao had a nice name. Mayweather started to slander him, say things like he was taking drugs, and when you start running into people like that, it's best that you stay away from them. It's not even necessary to even have them in your life. But if the fight does take place, I think that Pacquiao, because he's got the momentum, he's a real trainer, he's willing to take the fight, he'd probably beat Mayweather, probably. Not to say that Mayweather is a wonderful fighter. He is the best fighter I've ever seen in my life. But he can't beat Pacquiao, because there's something else going on in that fight business, that not the X's and the O's, there's something else.
Now, George, throughout your comeback, the fight that most people talk about is the fight they wanted to see you in was a fight with Iron Mike Tyson, who was the champ at that time. Did you ever have any serious negotiations to get that fight? And did you ever think, you know, that you would? And if you did, how do you think you would have done against him?
I read that there were a couple of times serious negotiations were going on with the Mike Tyson fight. Mike Tyson just didn't want to fight me. Not to say he couldn't have beaten me. I mean, this guy could punch. The bigger they are, the harder they'd fall as far as Mike Tyson was concerned. But I guess that I have a feeling that originally his original trainer and manager, Custy Amato, must have told him about George Foreman's punching power as though I would never come back. And so sometimes when you come back and a guy remember those stories, he say to himself, look, leave that guy alone. But I don't think I would have been that much problems to him. I had a good left jab, and I'd always do better if guys come to me. But Tyson was pretty smart with his footwork and hand speed. That would have been a tough fight for me.
Well, in your comeback, you did go 24-0, and then you finally got a chance at the heavyweight title. You know, something that you were pining for throughout your whole comeback. You got to go against Evander the Real Deal Holyfield, who was 25-0 at the time. What were your expectations going into that fight, and what do you think about the fight itself?
Oh, Holyfield was a splendid fighter, very elusive, and he had been well-trained, a good boxer, pure boxer. A few times I'd hit him, and I thought, boy, I got him now. And he'd maneuver out of there with his heart, get in position, and even throw punches back. He was not a heavy puncher at all, but he had endurance. I expected to win that boxing match, but I played around with too much publicity and 24 hours doing the interviews and all the things a boxer shouldn't do. So when the fight started, I was concentrating on putting on a show more than winning that boxing match. But Evander Holyfield had a lot to do with that. This guy was a very extremely good, elusive boxer. But I'd gone 12 rounds with him. I remember about the 11th round, he started holding on, and the referee told him, break, break, break. He would not let go. And the statement was made, evidence unleashed, that the age 40 and 50 is not a death sentence for an athlete. And that did more for sports than my victory would have if I'd knocked him out in one or two rounds. That statement, that age has got nothing to do with it, was good for sports.
Yeah, now, speaking of age having nothing to do with it, after the fight you won three more, and then you lost Tommy Morrison, and then you took a good long period out of the ring, I think about a year and a half off, and somehow you got a bout with Michael Moore, who had defeated Evander Holyfield to take the linear title and two of the belts. How do you feel about going into that bout facing a 35-0 Michael Moore?
That was a good experience for me because after the Morrison boxing match, actually I'd gone into television. I was given a television series where I started doing television. I thought I was going to be an actor, but it was too much work. I realized that acting is more work than boxing. The only luxury in that sport is a king-size bed in the afternoon and acting. So I came back afterwards, and I started negotiating for a title shot. Michael Moore, of course, had taken the title from Holyfield, and there it is. It just fell right in my lap. Michael Moore would get a big purse, and he thought he'd fight the easiest fight of his career, old George Foreman. And I already knew that I could punch, and someone had convinced him that he was a better puncher than me. And for some reason, the fight took place, and he didn't run. He did not run.
So what was it like when you got in there? You're getting outboxed primarily for most of the fight, and then in the 10th round, you sent him up for that beautiful shot. What were you thinking then?
Well, I'd always thought that in the boxing match, that if I knocked him down in the first round, he would run, and I'd never catch him. And that's what had happened with Tommy Morrison. He literally had run from me in the boxing match, and they gave him a decision. So I know if a guy gets in his mind, he's going to run from me, there's nothing I can do. But if I can get someone to come to me, and Michael Moore, of course, I jabbed him, hit him in the side a few earlier rounds. His manager was telling him, get him, get him, and there he was. I figured I threw the right hand lead, hook. He just would, rather than jump out of the way, he would duck the punches. I said, this is amazing, a bird nest on the ground. And I was able to steam in with a 1-2 combination left-right and knock him down. I hit him first up high, and I decided to lower my right hand a little bit, hit him again with the second right hand. There he was on the canvas. I knew a lot of people said it was a lucky shot, but I've been like that since I was, 17 years old. Always hitting guys with a shot like that. That's what I had done all my life.
Now, you won the title back after 20 years. I mean, what was that feeling like just to finally accomplish something that, you know, you'd lost to Ali and you're wearing the trunks that you wore when you fought Ali in that fight? What was it like to regain it after that long?
You think about 20 years, a whole 20-year time span passed where I told people that wasn't the George Foreman in Africa. I could have been champion of the world. Just had all these excuses, and people laughed at me. 20 years later, I'm in the ring, given a chance, and there's redemption. And from that point on, even for myself on a personal basis, I could sit back with some kind of contentment to say, I told you. But it was back to preaching and being a father again. No big deal. You have one moment in life where you say, I did it. Thank God for it. And the next day is about getting to the church and preaching and doing your work.
Well, I mean, when you did win it back, you know, you were recognized as the champion. And something that's always curious in boxing fans is, why did you decide to drop the WBA belt and not face Tony Tucker at the time?
Well, you know, I worked hard, campaigned hard. I had to fight lawsuits to even make certain that after Michael Moore signed the fight, that he would finish the boxing match with me. I did it, took care of that. Then after I'd gotten the, I forgot about the politics that goes on. You have to pay this guy to do this. You got to ask this guy to do this. I said, you know, I don't need that in my life anymore. I've gotten the title. You can have your title back. You can have your title back. Because I'd gotten it, and I just gave it back to them because that's not what I wanted to be, some young kid going around paying sanctioning fees for the rest of my life. I didn't want to do that.
Well, you amazed a lot of people towards the end of your career because the last fight you had, you fought a young kid by the name of Shannon Briggs. You know, he was 29-1. He was 25 years old. Yourself, you were a couple months shy of being 49. And to most people's eyes, you beat him handily in there, and they kind of robbed you of the decision. It's one of the most controversial fights people still talk about in heavyweight history now. How do you feel about that, though, and your decision to retire after it?
It's funny because I get into a boxing ring, and every time, every round, I try to knock guys out. If a guy would escape me for 12 rounds, he deserved it in the first place. I never went out to win a decision. Never. And some guys figure they go out and say, I'm going to go 12 rounds with George, and that's their victory. But I would always pursue a knockout. That's all I was after was if I go 12 rounds and they give it to the other guy, I never complain because that's not what I was trying to do, get a decision. I was trying to knock them out. So I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah.
I didn't get the victory, but I went home. They asked me after the fight, they said, George, you were robbed. I said, where I came from in Houston, Texas, the Fifth Ward area, you don't scream you were robbed and you still got $4 or $5 in your pocket. Boxing was about, and I never forgot, getting that title was the part to prove my integrity, but I really came back for the $1 million. And I ended up with $1 million and one more $100,000. And I don't have anything now because I got 10 kids. They have gone to college. You think you're rich? You educate 10 kids. Man, that's a cash register. I mean, it's a parking meter. You look up and they're saying, look, Dad, I got a degree. And you look and saying, I got a barrel wrapped around me. All my clothes are gone.
Yeah, as they say, it takes just one fight to pay for all their degrees. Did you ever think about coming back at any point after that brief fight?
Yeah, I was going to make a comeback at the age of 55. I was going to stay out and come back at 55. I was in good shape, and my wife convinced me that I would have to live in that mobile home outside if I ever go back into boxing. And I showed her that I could do it, and she said, George, isn't that the way you want to leave the sport, feeling like you can still do it? And I'd never considered that. I told her, I can do it. She said, that's the way you should want to leave. And I never came back. I just forgot it because to wake up every morning feeling like you can still do it is a thrill. But to have someone beat your brains out and you figure I can never do it, I don't think I wanted to wake up like that.
So after Shannon Briggs won the heavyweight title in 2007, you never said to yourself, hey, I got the better of him 10 years ago, maybe I should give it another shot?
You know, I never paid much attention to them. You know, like I said, for a long time I've been pretty... I haven't been interested in the heavyweight division because the guys don't seem to be that dedicated. I'm still hungry for a nice American heavyweight champion. If he does come back and I get an exciting one from America, I'm just going to buy a ringside seat and popcorn and enjoy myself. That's what I'm interested in now. Not coming back, but having popcorn and hot dogs and enjoying myself.
There was another guy out there that wanted you. He wanted a piece of you bad, and that was Larry Holmes in 1999. There was a fight that almost came together. They call it the birthday bash. Were you all disappointed that you never got to go in the ring with Larry?
Yeah, Larry was a good fighter, and I think that would have been a good showcase of talent for Larry Holmes and me. It never happened. And because it never happened, every year he'd go all over the country saying he wanted to fight me. And I tell my friends, I said, every year Larry Holmes escapes to his nursing home and challenges me, and I have to come out of my nursing home and tell him no.
Yeah. All right. Well, George, I have just two more questions for you, and I wanted to ask one more about your son. How far do you think he can go in his journey here? He's 27 years old. He's 8-0. Where do you see him going?
Well, he's going to take his time, and I've convinced him that, look, this is not – I don't care how old you are, you can't rush it. He's getting stronger. He's maturing later. He's even starting to get a chest, and his muscles are getting tough. So take your time. Next year, we'll start making our appearances on television, and people get a chance to see for themselves the best left jab in the heavyweight division. He'll put his combinations together, and I do believe he'll reach and grab himself a heavyweight title before it's over. He can do it. But it's not, he's 27.
Right.
I told him, just take your time. How many guys get them a great education from a Rice University? You just can't do it overnight. So you got to, and any of my kids want to be boxers, they must get a college education first. So it'll take them a little longer.
Have you had any advice for an upcoming fighter that wants to make it big in this sport? What would you give them?
Start small, learn the business, and doesn't matter how big you get, enjoy the publicity, because it doesn't matter how good you are, if people don't know about you, it doesn't mean much.
All right. And finally, to all your boxing fans out there, your fans and the listeners of On the Ropes Boxing Radio, anything you want to say to them?
Go out and find George Foreman Knockout Cleaning Solutions. It's an earth-friendly solution. I got it. You clean your houses. It doesn't hurt your children. And I'm trying to make myself, you know, you want to do something in life that you're proud of, not just make money, but good and friendly for the earth. The George Foreman Knockout Cleaning Solutions. Go find it.
I was a salesman, George, and it was an absolute pleasure having a chance to talk to you, because when I started the show, the one guy that I wanted to speak with was you, and so you made my dream come true here today, and I just want to thank you again for your time, and I wish you all the best with you and your son's future.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you, George. Great pleasure to talk to you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
One and only Big George Foreman, everybody. I'd say it's a classic interview if I've ever heard one. He touched on everything, the current heavyweight division, some of his favorite fighters, some back on his career, his potential comeback at the age of 55. Remy, what do you think?
Well, what can you say? It was Big George Foreman. I mean, it was a thrill to get a chance to speak to him and to echo with the sentiment of what you said there, Jenna. He's one of the guys I've always wanted to interview, and as far as I'm concerned, we've had a lot of great interviews on this show, and I put this one right up there with the best of them. I really enjoyed it, and one of the things I'm going to do is my place is a bit of a mess. I might have to go buy myself that George Foreman knockout cleaning solution as soon as I get the chance, but beyond that, it was great to hear him touch on so many topics that were, for me in particular, great points of interest. And, you know, I thought it was interesting to hear what he said about his career, to the story about after the Jimmy Young fight, to the Larry Holmes claim that every year he comes out of his nursing home to challenge George to a fight. And I especially found his opinions on Pacquiao interesting even. I think it's interesting that George thinks that Pacquiao doesn't need the fight and that he thinks Pacquiao would win the fight, which is in contrast to our guest earlier, Jean Pascal, who said, don't bet against a black man, which reminded me something of the effect of what Lieutenant Frank Drebin said in The Naked Gun when he said, never bet on the white guy. I thought it was a great interview with George, a great pleasure to get to speak with him, and I really... You know, I'm kind of blown away by getting all that insight. There were so many good aspects of what he had to say. Great pleasure to have him on the program.
And one of our listeners just commented that George Foreman's cleaning solution works great, and he would recommend it. So, you know what, if our listeners like it, I would say it's got to be some pretty good stuff. But, yeah, George touched on so many things there, and we're going to touch on all those in a minute. But first I want to go over to Nick here. Nick, what do you think?
Man, I mean, George, I have to agree with Romy. That interview, excuse me, has to be up in the echelons of some of the best OTRs ever done. And that plug was classic, and I think the only one that kind of matches the Big George KO Solutions is Marvelous Marvin Hagler plugging his cologne when we had him on the ropes a while back. But as I mentioned, as I was talking to some of the fans, George is one of those guys that is one of the most enticing speakers you could ever hear. When he tells you a story, it feels like you're actually there. It feels like you're actually experiencing it. When he told the story about when he was in the dressing room that led him to, you know, go on his religious tirade for about 10 years outside of boxing because he felt when he was out there as an evangelist. I mean, these are the kinds of things that just kind of blow you away, the detail that he gives you, even with things that happened so many years ago after taking so many punches to the head. I mean, this guy is one of a kind in the world of boxing, really in the world, period. He gives a great interview, and as one of the journalists in one of the Legendary Nights episode said, he's always the guy who can give you the quotes when you need them, and he'll even ask you, what do you need? And he certainly gave us and the listeners of OTR plenty of great quotes, great stories about his time spent in boxing, and hopefully his son, George III, can make his way up the heavyweight ranks and try to bring some life to this dissolved division, as George mentioned earlier, which he thinks of the heavyweight division. And I think the future holds well for his son, so long as his dad is by his side managing and progressing his career. And I can't wait to see what happens with that. And Big George, of course, probably one of the best guests we've ever had on, and it was an absolute joy to listen to.
Yeah, you know, and he certainly is well-spoken, you know, even at his age there, even all the fights he had, he sounds great. And you know what, if you can walk out of boxing that way, that's absolutely amazing, especially for a guy who fought later in his career the way he did. But let's comment on a few things that he did say about current boxing. You know, he was an HBO boxing analyst, and he did mention about the heavyweight division being the worst that he has ever seen. The guys aren't dedicated. There's nothing interesting coming out of it. I'm going to go over to you, Rummy. Do you think it's really true that there's just nothing positive to say about the heavyweight division, or do you think there's some hope coming up in the future?
I don't know if there's much hope coming out up in the future. I mean, I go back to the conversation we had about Chris Arreola earlier, and unfortunately, for better or worse, he's one of the best names out there right now, and here's a guy that doesn't even come into shape when he goes into the ring. And, you know, this kind of echoes the sentiment of what George was saying about a lot of these guys, a lot of these challengers not taking themselves seriously. And I don't know. I mean, eventually I think it will turn around, but as far as what I can personally see right now, I don't know if there's much hope in the immediate future. I mean, I hope that there is, but whether or not there actually is remains to be seen. I think that his opinion on the heavyweight division is a little bit unfair because I do think that Vladimir Klitschko is a very good fighter. I think that he has overcome the type of adversity in his career where, you know, after he lost to Corey Sanders and after he lost to Lamon Brewster, especially in his first fight with Emmanuel Stewart, Vladimir could easily have been done at that point in his career. He came back and persevered in that fight with Sam Peter, which is the fight I really think was the turning point for him. I agree that the heavyweight division is weak. I might even go so far to agree that I'm a little disappointed in it, too, because there isn't a whole lot to get excited about out there to the point where, you know, maybe Bernard Hopkins can grab himself a title from David Haye. I do think Vladimir Klitschko is a very good fighter, though, but the challengers that are out there for him, for the most part, I agree with everything Big George said on that front. I mean, the heavyweight division as a division is really nothing to get excited about right now. And even if Klitschko is one of those special fighters who isn't getting the respect he deserves from his contemporaries and maybe will someday down the line get it, even if he is that good, even if he does break that threshold in the top 15, top 10 heavyweights of all time, there's not a lot to get excited about in the division. So I agree with Big George. He made a lot of good points on that.
Yeah, I mean, if you do look at the heavyweight division, you don't see that young star coming up like you do in other divisions. I mean, all the guys that are heavyweight are, you know, they're in their late 20s, early 30s. Vladimir Klitschko's 34. I mean, you look at Billy Klitschko, he's 39. David Haye, he's almost 30. So, you know, there isn't a lot coming up to look forward to in the heavyweight division, and he's right about that. It is the weakest there. You know, we need some new blood in the heavyweight division. We need some of those guys that, you know, are going to football to come to boxing because Right now, it's not looking that great for the future. And after the Klitschkos retire, what's going to be out there? It's going to be a, you know, it's going to be a case of, you know, the basically the early '80s heavyweight division where Larry Holmes was the main guy, and there was a bunch of other guys out there that were switching belts. But you know, he also mentioned Manny Pacquiao. You know, he said he was one of his favorite fighters to watch out there. He said that Manny Pacquiao does not need Floyd Mayweather Jr. in his life. He doesn't need a guy out there that's making all these accusations against him and all these other claims. Do you agree with that in the sense that, you know, he should try to avoid being in there with Pacquiao, I mean, being in there with Mayweather in the sense that Mayweather keeps bringing up these things that are just, you know, that are basically hurting his pride a little bit there and preventing a matchup?
Well, I disagree with George in the sense that I do hope the fight happens. I think most boxing fans do, as I just want to see the fight. I don't care if it's Floyd's fault or if it's Pacquiao's fault or if it's Bob Arum's fault, or I don't care whose fault it is that the fight's not happening. It's potentially the biggest fight in boxing history. I want to see it happen, and there's no qualifications to that. I want to see the fight happen. I want to see these two guys put their differences aside and make it happen. That said, I think there's a lot of legitimacy to what Big George had to say there, because Pacquiao is one of those guys that the run he's been on since his rematch with Juan Manuel Marquez, where he jumped up in weight, he beat David Diaz, then he went on to the De La Hoya, the Hatton, the Cotto, and most recently Joshua Claudy. I think that, you know, Pacquiao really did make a good name for himself, and what he has done really is something special, where he has that certain hunger, and he's one of those fighters that you're not going to see too often, maybe not more than once in a lifetime. I think that George had a good point when he said that Pacquiao's good name has been slandered by Mayweather, and I understand what Foreman was saying when he said, when you have a guy that starts doing stuff like that, you don't need a guy like that in your life. Now, from a fan's perspective, I want to see the fight between Pacquiao and Mayweather happen no matter what. But from Foreman's perspective, he's been there and done that. I'm just some guy watching on TV and you know, wanting to see good fights for my own entertainment. I wasn't a fighter. I wasn't a two-time world heavyweight champion. And to hear that from George Foreman, I can't disrespect that opinion. I think that there's a lot of validity to that. I think to a large degree, Pacquiao's name has been slandered by the Mayweathers. And from what Foreman was saying, I really do understand that perspective, that maybe Pacquiao should just say, to hell with this guy, I don't need him. And George is right about that, because at the end of the day, yeah, right now the flavor of the month is for that fight to happen, and it could potentially be the biggest fight ever. But what Pacquiao has done, I think that to a large extent, Floyd needs him more than he needs Floyd. And I do think that George is right that Pacquiao doesn't need a guy like that in his life, because I think Pacquiao's legacy is already established beyond reproach to the point where nobody can question what Pacquiao has accomplished in this sport. He really has been an amazing fighter on an amazing run, and his crowd-pleasing, entertaining style of ferociousness and power is just something that boxing fans yearn for. So I understand what George was saying. From my perspective as a fan, yeah, I want to see the fight. From what George was saying, yeah, I got to agree with what he said, because Pacquiao probably doesn't need Mayweather from that point of view.
Yeah, well, when you look at it now, I'd say it's a little too late. Mayweather already being in his life has already caused tons of problems. You have all the fans that you go to the forums, you see everyone every day make accusations against Manny Pacquiao. Stuff that was never talked about before is now talked about regularly. So the damage has been done there, so there's no harm in continuously pursuing that matchup. I mean, if you look at Muhammad Ali versus Joe Frazier, he called Joe Frazier every name in the book. He slandered him on TV. He called him all sorts of things, called him Uncle Tom. He did all these other things to him. And you know what? It helped build the fight. And it wasn't good for either of the two guys liking each other. Joe Frazier still holds the grudge today. If Pacquiao and Mayweather fight, you know what? I'm sure they're not going to like each other after. But at this point there, I do believe that, you know what? No matter what, it should happen. No matter what has been said, I think it should be looked upon. You know, looked over and make that fight happen, because boxing needs it. And you are correct about one thing, though. Manny Pacquiao does need Floyd Mayweather Jr. more than, Floyd Mayweather Jr. needs Pacquiao more than Pacquiao needs Mayweather, because if you look out there, Mayweather doesn't have very many options, and Pacquiao has quite a few. And speaking of that, his next fight is against Antonio Margarito. It's going to be most likely at Cowboy Stadium now. There's other locations discussed. I'm going to go back to you, Rummy. His last fight against Claudio was at that stadium. You're all surprised it's going to take place there, or is it something you expected?
I'm not I don't know if I actually expected it, but I'm not the least bit surprised. There's been rumblings about this going on for quite a while now, and you know that Cowboys owner Jerry Jones, he was definitely keen on having more fights there. I think the fight with Claudio, I mean, I remember Max Kellerman, they had him bouncing around from one part of the stadium to the other, and I remember watching that thing on TV and just being like, wow, that's a stadium. So to bring boxing back there, especially Manny Pacquiao, whom I personally still view as the biggest star in the sport, it's not that surprising. I don't know that I was expecting it to take place there, but I know there's been talks of having Pacquiao go back there all along, and before the latest negotiations between Pacquiao and Mayweather had broken down, there was talks of that fight even possibly being held there had that fight happened. So Pacquiao going back to Cowboy Stadium, not surprising. I don't think that I expected it, but not surprising.
I think it's good that it's taking place there, especially because it just adds the magnitude of the event. If it was at somewhere in Las Vegas where you're having maybe 15,000, 17,000 people in there, it takes away from it. People aren't really looking forward to the Antonio Margarito matchup as much, but to have, you know, to fight in front of 50,000, 60,000 fans in a stadium capable of holding 100,000, that's really something. It makes it more of an event. You know, it makes it more interesting to the fans. More fans can go out and see it. You know, it doesn't matter if the farthest seat there makes the fighters look like ants. I mean, you know, it's about the event itself. And I'm actually happy that it's going to be taking place here in the United States and in Cowboy Stadium. So an excellent place. From what I saw in the whole Claudio broadcast, it was an excellent place for a fight to take place. That huge screen and everything else, I think it's just great that it's probably going to happen there. But anyways, guys, let's move on to this upcoming week and the boxing that is coming up. My co-host here, Jeff Ciani, will be have the great honor of actually covering one of these fights live. That would be Thomas Adamic versus Michael Grant. You've been a big Adamic fan. You've covered his workouts. What are you looking forward to in this matchup, and what do you expect?
You know, I have that. I've been wrong on predictions before, as you and Nick both well know. I really think that this could wind up being a great fight. I don't know why I'm saying that. It's just one of those hunches I have. Reminds me a little bit of the feeling I had before the Galata-Grant fight, which I still view as one of the more interesting heavyweight fights that took place in the last 15 years. And I thought it was a good competitive fight, and I think we're going to see something good. I'm honored that I'll get a chance to be ringside for that one. I'll actually be heading there straight from vacation. I think that Adamic, by all logic and reason, he should win, and he should maybe even stop Grant. That's debatable. I do think Adamic will win, but I can't get the idea out of my head that I know for a fact, having met the man, and he's a very nice guy, Adamic, he's not that big. His biggest problem is that he's not that big. He's not a true heavyweight. No matter how you slice it, all the success he's had, and he's impressed me and even, you know, surprised me along the way. From the moment he moved up to fight Galata, to his tough fight against Estrada, to his most recent outing against Areola, where I picked Adamic, but I really did think Areola, I was picking more with my heart in that one. I thought that Areola would probably beat him when I broke it down logically. I think Adamic should win, but Grant is a huge guy. And he could punch. And I concede, I haven't seen too many of Grant's recent fights. But a guy that big, with a good right hand, against a guy who's a special fighter, but not really a heavyweight, I think anything could happen. And if Grant wins this fight, I really won't be surprised. I think Adamic should win. I think Adamic will win. But I think he might face some adversity along the way, and I don't know if it will necessarily be easy, especially in those early rounds where Adamic's superior athleticism and boxing skill will be nullified and neutralized by Grant's just superior size and strength. I think it's going to be a tough fight for Adamic. I do think he could win inside the distance, though. I do think he could crack Grant's chin and win inside the distance, but I don't know what to expect. I think it's going to be an entertaining scrap, whatever happens, though. At least that's the feeling I got, Jenna.
Yeah, that's what you could hope for. I just don't expect it at all. I've seen Michael Grant. I saw a fight from him about 2 years ago. He was fighting a journeyman that had a barely 500 record. He went 8 rounds of him. He didn't look particularly that great or devastating with his shots. I think in his last fight before his recent comeback, he went 12 rounds with a journeyman type that had been knocked out with many fighters. I don't believe he's going to pose that type of knockout risk to Thomas Adamek. And I don't believe at this stage, he's 38 years old, that he's going to be able to go the distance with Adamek. I think Adamek's punches will be too much. I think he'll be too active for him. I'm a little curious what Grant, what he's going to look like coming into the ring. I mean, it depends what weight he's at, how competitive he'll be. If he comes up there in the high 260s, it's going to be a short night. If he comes in the 250s in shape, he could go to the later rounds. But I honestly see Thomas Adamek stopping Michael Grant somewhere around the 9th or 10th round. If I was going to put an exact prediction on it, I would say Thomas Adamek, KO, 9. Nick Powers, how do you see this one?
You know, Jenna, I was kind of swaying back and forth with this fight as far as my official pick, but I have to side with you on this one. I'm pretty sure Adamek's going to end up winning somewhere around mid to late KO. I might say we're in the 8th. Somewhere around the 8th, maybe even the 7th round. I'm hesitant to say that he's going to win by KO early because, as Romy mentioned, Grant is a big guy, and he's a guy who can punch, especially if he's in shape and he comes into this fight in shape, Jenna, as you mentioned. But to be honest, I think watching the Adamek fight Chris Areola, as Romy brought up, made me more of a believer as to what he can do at heavyweight. As critical as I've been about Chris Areola, he can sure as hell punch too, as probably even better than Grant, and he definitely has a much better chin than Grant. So I'm pretty sure that Adamek is going to be able to win this fight fairly easily, and I think the fact that Grant's chin isn't the best in the world, let alone the best in the heavyweight division, is going to work in Adamek's favor. Though he's not a natural heavyweight, as we brought up a guy like Holyfield earlier, who also wasn't a natural heavyweight, he's got the heart and he's got the skills to succeed in that weight division, and every fight that he goes into in the heavyweight division, there's always something that people think is going to stand in his way. Right now, it's Grant's size and possibly his power. But if you ask me, Adamek's movement and the fact that he possesses a lot of speed for a heavyweight because he's a smaller heavyweight, and of course he's not a natural heavyweight, is going to work in his favor. And as so many people in the boxing community will tell you, speed equals power, and I think that's what we're going to see in this fight. Being that he is going in there against a much bigger guy than he's ever seen before, I don't think he's going to be coming out there guns blazing, so I don't pick him to win by early KO. But I think once he's able to get into his rhythm and realize that he's got the edge in Grant, he's going to be able to get his shots off a lot quicker, put his punches together better, and he's going to be firing combinations, and he'll end up putting Grant out probably in the mid to late rounds. As of right now, I'm going to pick him in the 8th. By the time we get to the official picks, my pick might get earlier. I'm not sure. But, I'm picking Adamek by mid to late round KO in this fight.
Yeah, if anything you want to say, it's really good matchmaking by the Adamek team because Michael Grant has not been at his best since, before the Lennox Lewis fight. I mean, Lennox Lewis's fight didn't even look that good. And he had a little bit of a resurgence with Teddy Atlas, but that didn't go far when he met up with Dominic Quinn. So I really just don't expect very much from Michael Grant. I'd like to be surprised. I would like to see, put up a good fight and see the fight maybe go the distance and guys train shots, maybe both guys in the canvas. I just don't see it happening here. If Thomas Adamek loses to Michael Grant, I will be absolutely shocked. I'll be on the show the next week saying I can't believe it because I just don't see it. But, I've been wrong before, It's life. Sometimes you're wrong. Some people said Buster Douglas wouldn't be able to beat Mike Tyson. Look what happened there. But, I mean, other people have been wrong, too, like Rummy here, who said for a year that Chad Dawson would absolutely dominate, destroy, because he's an elite fighter, Tavoris Cloud. I don't know, Rummy, do you still share that thing there? How do you see Cloud Dawson going?
Well, before I get into Cloud Dawson, I'd like to just first chime in and say, I think it's ironic that I'm the only one here who thinks that Grant could pose a big threat to Adamek, and I actually think Adamek's going to stop Grant earlier than both of you. I didn't give an official prediction. My official prediction is Adamek KO5, and I do think he's going to get to Grant's chin, but I wouldn't be surprised if Grant gives him problems, and as Roger Bloodworth told me in a recent interview.
Wait, you said that he was going to most likely, you said it would be more likely that he could go the distance in rounds. Now you're saying it's going to be a short night for him. Which is it?
No, I said that I wouldn't be surprised if Grant won. I said it was debatable whether Adame could stop him inside the distance and that I thought he would. I'm going for KO5 as my official prediction. But I would not be surprised if Grant wins this fight. And Bloodworth himself said, when I asked him, do you think somebody the size of Grant could give Adame problems? He said, well, he might be able to. I mean, he's a big dude that can punch. That's why they call it a fight, and that's why they go in the ring. And as Bloodworth knows, and I do think Adamek's improved a great deal under Bloodworth, but Bloodworth was in David Tua's corner when he, you know, not too many people were picking Monty Barrett. I know it was officially a draw. Not too many people thought Barrett was going to put up much of an effort against Tua. So I think Bloodworth understands better than anybody. As he said, every great fighter has one last great fight in them. Barrett may have had his against Tua. I don't think that they're going to be taking this lightly. I just think that Adamek's inferior size and the fact that he's not a true heavyweight, I think that Grant could match up better stylistically against him than either you or Nick give credit for. That said, I do still think Adamek will crack his chin earlier than you guys think.
Norm, you confused me a little bit there. You say it's going to be competitive, but it's going to be knocked out in the fifth round. But I want to get your perception. I did not ask you this earlier, but I want to ask you it now. Now that you've seen Chad Dawson lose, and you've been telling me for a year that Chad Dawson was going to school Tavoris Cloud, it's something we've debated on and off, do you think if Cloud and Dawson meet, who do you think will win?
I wouldn't write Dawson off, but at this point I have to say Cloud, and I have to say you were right. And for the reasons I said earlier, and I'll go back to the Galata analogy I made early in the program today, Dawson is an A-plus level talent. He does everything right. He has all the skills, he has all the talent, he has all the athleticism. He's a great boxing talent. For whatever reason, that's never translated into him being a great boxer, the type to generate all kinds of buzz and excitement amongst the fans. Given the fact that Dawson has now proven several instances in his career that he just doesn't seem to have the hunger or the charisma or the mass appeal to fans, I think he lacks the heart and passion. I think I'm leaning your direction now. I would not write Dawson off after this fight. I think there's a chance he could come back with his mind more dedicated and more focused and more ready for the task at hand. But based on what I've seen now, and especially this past weekend, I'm not sure he has the hunger to beat Cloud. I wouldn't count him out, but I'm starting to lean your direction on that one, and I'm starting to think that, yeah, Cloud might be too much for Dawson because Cloud seems to have a lot of heart and he seems very determined. And I think that's a bigger obstacle for Dawson than Cloud's inferior skills will be. Or phrased differently, Dawson is the better skilled fighter. I have no doubt about that. But that won't translate into a victory if he's not hungry, and I know Cloud's hungry. So if that fight happens next, I'm starting to agree with you. I would definitely favor Cloud at this point based on the lack of passion I saw from Dawson this weekend.
All right, well, it's good that you finally came my way on that one. I've been saying it for years. You didn't listen to me after Mayweather versus Mosley, where I said I was even more sure that Cloud would beat Dawson. And I am a little bit disappointed in the sense that Cloud won't be able to take that O away. But you know what? Hey, if that fight happens, I'll still be looking forward to it. But anyway, just to change things back to the fights that are coming up, Marco Huck returns. He'll be fighting Matt Godfrey for the WBO Cruiserweight title belt. Marco Huck's a guy that I've been very high on since his rise in the cruiserweight division, ever since he lost to Steve Cunningham. He's made some great improvements, at least in my opinion. He'll be fighting Matt Godfrey, who's a former OTR guest, two-time OTR guest. We'll go back to you, Rummy. You see Marco Huck. You've seen his improvements there. Do you see Matt Godfrey upsetting him?
I think that Godfrey is going to be hungry, because I think Godfrey is probably still disappointed, if you recall that ESPN Friday night fight that was supposed to happen between Godfrey and Cunningham. So I think we're going to see the best version of Godfrey that we've seen come to the ring for this fight. And I think it's going to be a competitive fight, but I actually think that Huck is going to win a decision. I think it will be a close decision. I think it will be a competitive fight. And I definitely see Marco Huck retaining his title.
I do, too. I see him doing it by 12-round unanimous decision. Matt Godfrey's a very good challenger. I mean, he's a very good cruiserweight. He's probably a top 10 cruiserweight. I just think Marco Huck's a little bit class above him. And I think it's going to show up in this fight here. I see him winning somewhere around 8-4. I say he can make it a competitive fight, but I still see Marco Huck winning and legitimately winning. Nick Powers, how do you see it?
Well, I may see it a little bit closer than you guys see it at this point. I mean, Matt Godfrey's got Iceman John Scully, you know, on his team in his corner, and Iceman is a really, really great trainer. We've had him on the ropes before, and he's an analyst on ESPN now, and he's a guy who's been around boxing forever, still is, and he really knows his stuff. And I think that if Ice is really high on a guy like he is about Godfrey, then he's got a reason to be. And I think that I agree with Rummy in the sense that we're going to see the hungriest Godfrey we possibly can. But I'm not sure we're going to see the hungriest Marco Huck that we possibly can. I think that Huck isn't going to be able to get up for a guy like Godfrey as much as he would a guy sort of like a Steve Cunningham or even an Adamek if he were back down at cruiserweight. I think that Huck may not put on his best performance in this fight. I think Godfrey might be able to catch him at a good time, especially considering the level of intensity he's going to bring in the ring himself, Godfrey, that is. So, I mean, right now I'm leaning towards Huck taking it by decision, as most people probably are, but I wouldn't be hard-pressed to see Godfrey kind of try and pull off an upset here. I really believe that Godfrey has what it takes to catch him at the right place at the right time, and he very well may pull this off. I mean, you never know. So right now I'm probably going to pick Huck by close decision, probably 7-5. And but as the fight gets closer, I may end up switching my pick. I may pick Godfrey by upset, close decision, but I'm not sure. As of right now, I'm going to have to go with Huck by 7-5 unanimous decision. But at the same time, I have a feeling. I have a feeling in the pit of my stomach that Godfrey may be able to pull off an upset here. But we'll see what in the coming days if that's strong enough for me to make an official pick on it.
All right, well, we'll certainly have to see on that one. For all the listeners out there, if you want a little bit more from On the Ropes, you can go to www.ontheropesboxingradio.com. You can find all of our past episodes, articles, guest highlights, everything. You can find it on that site there, including the Rummy's Challenge, where you can put your predictions against ours. And so far, both my co-hosts are behind me in the standings, so their predictions haven't been matching up. But anyways, there's another fight actually taking place this coming Wednesday. It's not Wednesday night fights, but it is taking place on Wednesday. And on ESPN2, Eris Landy Laura will be fighting against Willie Lee. And also Yordanis Despaigne will go against Frank Penes. Both look like very good competitive matchups. I'm looking forward to it. It's good to see boxing again on a Wednesday. So hopefully you fans look out for that. Anyways, I'd like to thank both our guests that we had on today. We had Jean Pascal, the reigning light heavyweight champion of the world, and also Hall of Famer Big George Foreman. It was a pleasure talking to them both. I'd like to thank both my co-hosts, Nick Powers, Jeff Ciani, who's currently on vacation and still able to do the show, which we always like that. He's a trooper. And to all the fans out there, we thank you again for listening, and we hope you enjoy the show. Catch you next time.